بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الشباب شعبة من الجنون. Youth is a phase of madness. The right thing is to think and then to take a step. But in the youth, the first thing that happens is you take the step, then you think, did I do the right thing or not? Youngster, adventurous, and very much ambitious. So the first thing that comes to his mind is material security. He must get wealth. The aspiration for wealth, the people work in different ways, different directions. And the tendency is that we imitate others. Well, this worked for this person, so it will work for me. People have their style, their ways to reason, to understand. But the bottom line is that every person at that age, 20, 21, is looking for a quick fix. A good solution, quick, must come and must come straight. Then in getting to that point, some are using concocted, fabricated ways, and some are using genuine ways. Sharia doesn't prevent you. But to go, to step over the mark, to cross the lines, this is what the Sharia will definitely stop you from. Your dream may be as great as ever, but if the help of Allah Ta'ala is not with you, then you can't win, no matter what happens. The help of Allah Ta'ala is not with you. One goes into interest, and someone tells him, no, it's a genuine need, so you can interest whatever. So he gets his property bonded, and then he gets a loan, and tries to do an investment. This in mind, that this thing will bring so much of returns. Because this is what they told me, that this is the return that he's going to get. So in order to do that, he went to the bank, got the loan, bonded his property, and invested it. In a year's time, he discovers that something went sour, something didn't work like how he had planned, that thing crashed, the house of his gone, the money is gone, everything's gone. In a year aha, nawo raha. Your aspirations and dream didn't work out, and what wealth you had, that also was dragged. So ask for wealth, but ask in the Quranic words. The Quranic word is Rabbana atina fi dunya hasana wa fil akhirati hasana. Allah Ta'ala grant me the good in this life and the good in the next. One is to ask what I feel is good. So that's not the word of the Quran. Allah Ta'ala, what you consider to be good, grant that to me. What I consider to be good may not turn out to be good. It's an imagination, it's a speculation, it's a guess. I think that this will be good for me. But is it the good thing for me or not? That is a different thing altogether. I'm sitting here and I'm thinking of, I don't know why this incident of Maulana Abdul Haq Saab Rahmatullahi is flashing repeatedly on my mind. I mean, that thought flashes repeatedly in the mind that it's nice to discuss it. I try to say something else, but this incident of Maulana Abdul Haq Saab Hardoi Rahmatullahi, the last one of the greatest Khalifa of the Maulana Thani Saab Rahmatullah Ali, passed away about 10-15 years ago. So someone asked his father, one son, made him a PhD, and the other son made him a Maulana, and connected him with the Maulana Thani Saab Rahmatullah Ali. What's the difference in their attitudes? So when I made him a PhD, got degrees, and earning so much, and so many people at his service, and when you made him a Maulana, a little bit broken down, got wealth, doesn't have wealth, living a respectable life, but not at the level that this person is living. He says, alright, let me show you an experiment. So, say, just be around me for a couple of good days, then I'll show it to you. So the one day, the PhD was around. When he was around, so he says to his PhD son, "Bhai, better zara joote le aao." So he said, "Better zara joote le aao, get the shoes." So, "Are fala, oh, khadim, come. See, the boss wants his shoes." So he got it arranged, got the khadim to pick up the shoes and give it to the boss. That was gone, that was finished. After some days, Mawlana was there. Same, exactly the same. Mawlana juti lao. So he went straight away, he got the thing polished. And then, "Abba, you're going to work now." So he presented it himself, considering it to be an honor. "Abba, have some water at least before you go. You know, it's hot today and you may just get dehydrated. Take some nice cool water and your day will pass well." So he's telling his guest now, see the attitude. Now, this attitude changes with mizaj, with the association, with the right type of association. In the words of Hazrat Ji Rahmatullahi, that association, not just an association, but an association with fikr. So the association is important, but that association supported with fikr will bring about the right attitude. Otherwise, it will be an association. You may think that you have got some barakat, but you didn't get that desired effect. Because there wasn't that fikr, either it was some different agenda. Now this agenda thing, it's a very important thing. See, the Quran Sharif, when it starts off Surah Baqarah, I'll come to the story just now again. So, Allah Ta'ala details the three classes of mankind. One is the mu'mineen, and their characteristics, their ways, their behavior, their concepts, and what they live for. Then, Allah Ta'ala speaks about the kafir, and what are his faiths, what is his faith, what is the details, what is his agenda in life, what is his goal in life. Then, after these two categories, then approximately 5 or 7 verses of the Quran Sharif is dedicated on the munafiqeen, showing that this munafiqeen would be a more conspicuous group. So there will be so many munafiqeen here, so you'll need to understand who is this group. Basically, the Quran is saying there's going to be two groups of munafiqeen. One is who've got pure kufr in their hearts, and they show Islam, right? So this pure kufr is shown in two ways. One is pure, that what's concealed in his heart is absolute kufr. Just for some convenience, he's showing Islam. And the other way that this nifaq and hypocrisy is shown is the cover is Islamic, proper Islamic, right? But in the pretext of Islam, I am reinterpreting the Islamic terminology, right? It's an Islamic terminology, but I'm giving it a different interpretation. I will do everything, but I'll just give it, I'll just reinterpret it. For example, I will just reinterpret interest. I will say it's just a penalty. And a penalty is allowed by certain so-and-so ulama have allowed. So I gave a reinterpretation. Moved away. I reinterpreted the word interest. What I said, it's a penalty. And penalty is allowed, for example, by Imam Ahmad ibn Hanbal rahmatullah alayh, right? So now, therefore, a penalty is permissible. But then, when you analyze that whole penalty, so what is the difference between a penalty and interest? Interest, you are paying an additional amount because of the deferred payment. Aren't you paying something additional because of a deferred payment? Again, if you look at a penalty, then you are paying an additional amount because of you delaying the payment, right? So, the penalty and the interest in that respect is the same. So now, the one that is for this, now he'll go and support it again. He says, "No, like, this is permissible. Why is it permissible? Because this penalty will not be used by the receiver. I am receiving the penalty, I'm not going to use it. I'm going to give it in some charitable cause. So because I'm taking this penalty and using it in a charitable cause, therefore it is permissible." That's how they're explaining. So the principle to be learnt here is this, that the end doesn't justify the act. See, the end doesn't justify the act. You say, you know, take this money here, this additional amount that I took in the name of penalty, I will give it to a poor person in a charitable cause, so therefore I am right in what I am doing. So if that's the case, then I can say that what I will do is, I will go and rob and cheat the people of Slanga, for example, because they are very wealthy, but millions and millions, they don't know what to do with the money, I'll go and rob them. And people, for example, in Phoenix or somewhere they are suffering, I will go and spend it upon them. So the end is right, but just is justify the act. Justify. I'm stealing and robbing here, and I'm doing it for a justifiable cause. Now, will that be permissible? So now this is called ilhad in the words of the Quran, in the ladina yulhiduna fi ayatina, in the words of the hadith, that such a person is called a zindiq. So you are trying to justify something with an Islamic pretext. Right. I will give an Islamic pretext and I will say this is justified, this is permissible. Now this is one of the challenges of the day. So I will say, for example, that there is a hadith about picture making, right? And picture making, the person that makes the picture, أَشَدُّ عَذَابًا يَوْمَ الْقِيَامَةِ, he'll be exposed to the worst type of punishment. Worst type of punishment is all for the picture maker. So now, I need to justify what I'm doing. Now, in the justification process, I'll have to redefine picture. You see how the interest has been redefined. So the picture has to be redefined. Why? So as to legalize it. Because you're not going to redefine this. And people say, what are you doing? You're taking pictures of animal objects. Don't you know it's haram? The worst punishment is going to be for the picture maker. Don't you know about that? So I need to come at the point, I have to redefine this. When I redefine this, now you can't make an allegation. So I would say, now this is digital, it's not normal photography. It's not a picture, this is digital. Now what is digital? I think it will take a rocket scientist to understand what is digital as compared to a normal photography. This is also an animate object. This is also an animate object. But the average person, I would say even the average alim can't understand what it is. You ask him to define a digital against a normal photograph, he can't define. He can't distinguish this from this. But now you have to redefine this to justify the end. You see. So justifying the end, the end doesn't justify the beginning. I'm going to say, I got a good reason for doing this. Because my reason is good, therefore this is permissible, this is justifiable, this is permissible. The end doesn't, otherwise you must say, it is permissible for me to go and rob the people in Slanga to go and help out the people in Phoenix. Why will you say that is impermissible? You will just say the same thing, that the end doesn't justify the actual act. So the easy way to say it, by I'm doing wrong, Allah must forgive me. I'm shaving my beard, for example, I'm doing wrong. I accept that this is the command of Allah Ta'ala, and I'm doing a very stupid thing. I'm not supposed to be doing this. And Allah must give me tawfiq one day that I will do this. But at the time, justify it. They say, no, they've done it. In Egypt, they've done it. Ulama are saying that the wearing of a beard is not an obligation. It was just the general style of the Arabs at the time that they used to wear a beard. Right? It was sunnata adiya. What was the general style? When it was general style, it wasn't an obligation. Like how, keeping a walking stick is a sunnah, right? Or wearing a lungi is a sunnah, right? This one never wore trousers according to the authentic hadith. There isn't one authentic hadith proving that there is some wore a trouser. He wore a lungi all his life. So they would say, no, you know what, this wearing of a sunnah, wearing of a lungi, it's a sunnah, but it was a general style in the Arabs. It wasn't done as a dini thing. It was done because it was general attire, that was a general clothing. So similar is the keeping of a walking stick. It was a general trend of the Arabs, right? The same applies to the beard. It was a general trend. So it wasn't done as a sunnah that will be a requirement, that as an obligation. It's not done like that. So they were wife of the entire beard. Now you will see big pura qurra, qari sahab's coming, wala's coming, but they're clean shaven. Now the sun is on who? The sun is on the person who initiated this, who redefined the whole thing. He redefined it and he got the whole beard out of the picture, completely out of the picture. So you don't see an alim reputable qari sahib in Egypt, and in fact some of the neighboring countries also, that have any proper beards. They don't consider it as sunnah any longer. Then we would say, no, but they are Arabs, and they know the Arabic language, and these people are Hindi, Chindi. So, unko kya malum? But it doesn't mean if you're Hindi, Chindi, then you don't know it. You know, there was a discussion when this King Saud, when he was nominated a prime minister, so he had a sitting for all the ulamas. Ulama from India also were invited, so they represented Dioban, etc. They were representing them. So the Dioban, the alim, stood up and he says that you have to have a parliament. You can't be a one-man show. You have to have a parliament. So one Arab supported it and he said yes, that there were six members, there were six people that were appointed as the parliament. Hazrat Usman Ghani, Hazrat Ali radiallahu anhu, Talha, Zubair, Abdul Rahman ibn Auf, and Saad ibn Abi Waqqas. So these were the six people that were appointed by Hazrat Umar radiallahu anhu to be the parliament. They will make the shura, they will decide. So the Indian alim from Deoband, he challenged and said, no, it wasn't six, it was seven people. So that Arab alim was really, really upset. Okay, I am a master of hadith, I know the hadith on my fingertips. And then this, in Hindi, Chindi, he came and corrected me. So he went up to his mother, and he says to his mother, Ma, you know what, I mentioned this from Saud, the king, Abdul Aziz or Saud, whoever it was. I mentioned from the king, and one Hindi, Chindi, he came and corrected me. He said, no, there were not six people, there were seven people that were in the parliament of Hazrat Usman Ghani radiallahu anhu, appointed by Hazrat Umar radiallahu anhu. So he said, what the Hindi, Chindi said was right. It appears in approximately page 550 or 530 in Bukhari Sharif. She gave the page number, everything. The seventh person was Abdullah ibn Umar radiallahu anhu. He'll be part of the shura. He will not be appointed as the khalifa. Because the earlier khalifas, they didn't like this. They didn't like a succession plan, father to son and grandson, etc. And the reason is obvious. The reason is, sometimes the man is suitable, right? He's suitable for the position, right? And sometimes he's not suitable, right? He's not suited for the position. He doesn't have the capacity for it. To have the capacity, you need to be able to occupy the seat. You need to have the capacity, the ability to execute, the ability to administer, right? You need to have that. And number two, you need to have the passion for it as well. Right, he has the ability, but he doesn't have a passion for it. Or he has a passion for it, but he doesn't have the ability for it. Then, is it the right type of successor? So he's not the right type of successor. Now, you just appoint the person as a successor to the throne, not verifying his credentials, that does he have the capacity for it? Number two, does he have a passion for it? And you just put him onto the seat, and then there's a whole disarray, whole confusion, corruption in the entire kingdom. Is that the right thing? So, Abdullah ibn Umar is my son, son of Umar radiallahu anhu. He'll be appointed as a part of the parliament, but he will not be appointed as the khalifa. As he's suited because he's an alim, man of experience, he can give you some very, very good advice he can give you. Very sound advice he can give you. That we will won't mind, but he will not be appointed as the khalifa. So, when we're talking about deen, we're talking about academics, then look at the academic now. Don't see now, hey, this person is Arab, he's not an Arab. Then I will ask you, Imam Bukhari said, what was he? Was he an Arab? He wasn't an Arab, but the whole world, Arab and non-Arab, everybody accepted him. And they rate him as the highest in hadith. Right? Imam Abdullah bin Subayl was the head imam of the Haram Sharif some years ago. When he came and visited us, so he speaks about Imam Abu Hanifa as the Imam Azam, that was his word that he used. That the greatest imam from all the galaxy of the imams, he rated him the highest. Though he's a humbly, but he also acknowledges the greatness, the superiority of Imam Abu Hanifa rahmatullahi alayhi, in spite of him being a humbly. And Imam Abu Hanifa rahmatullahi alayhi has nothing to do with Arabs. He's a Persian from birth. But if you look at it at an academic level, then he is highest. The galaxy of imams, So he's the highest. So he's given him that recognition, that respect. So we're coming back to our topic, you know, we're talking about wealth, right? And this thing, I need wealth, Allah this me wealth. رَبَّنَا آتِنَا فِي الدُّنْيَا. That is not a guarantee that wealth will bring about good. Sometimes it may be the other way around, it may be a problem, it may be a disgrace, that wealth may be a penalty for you, it may be a problem for you. See, the Quran says, لَا تُعْجِبْكَ أَمْوَالُهُمْ وَأَوْلَادُهُمْ إِنَّمَا يُرِيدُ اللَّهُ لِيُعَذِّبَهُمْ بِيَا فِي الْحَيَاةِ الدُّنْيَا. What is intended through this wealth, that this wealth becomes a means of his punishment. Man was at ease, he was enjoying life, he's at his sukoon, peace, he's eating a bit less, not so many varieties, but there was a lot of peace, a lot of happiness, and he had a lot of time for everything, deen, his family, his wife, his children. He was disseminating, he was teaching, he was passing on deen. But he wanted more. When he wanted more, he got the more, but then he got consumed. When he got consumed, now he doesn't have time for his wife, for his children, for his deen. Yes, he's got more. So this wealth was meant to be a punishment for this person here. We had the time, he was relaxed, he was at ease. He would have passed his deen properly. So that when he has, even his time has come to leave the world, then he can say confidently can say, that, you know what, I earned dunya, but I didn't neglect my children. I didn't neglect my deen. I didn't neglect my duties to my wife, to my children, to my immediate family, to my extended family. I gave them also deen like I had given them dunya. If I have worried about the dunya, then I have given them a reasonable amount of deen. They are sound in dunya, they are sound in deen as well. This morning there was a phone in London. So man is phoning. He says that, you know what, it's a law now in the schools and the colleges that we have to expose our children lesbianism and gay and all this. Give the fazilat of it. We only have the fazaila amal. Now they have the fazaila gay, fazaila of lesbianism, and other one more things they got. So that all that fazilat must be taught to the children at that infantry level. Why? Must be fair. Must be fair. But that fairness of this is interpreted by them. That's the problem. You can't interpret it. They must interpret what is fair and just. So no. Let's talk about it, talk about the fazilat and the virtue of this thing here. So I said, if there is freedom of speech, if any country says there is freedom of speech, then like that person has got the right to speak for the gays, then the other side must have the right to speak out against it. If this party hasn't got the right to speak out against it, then where is the fair play? Where is the justice? It's a one-sided thing. And yet then they say, oh, your democracy or whatever else. So anyway, that person phoned up and he says, you know, now how do we coexist? How do we coexist? And, you know, we have to live here now, come and settle here, and this is the problem, what the ulama has to say, what are the ulama doing for us? So it's easy to say that, but alhamdulillah, with the grace of Allah, I don't become overwhelmed. It's just the grace of Allah. Wherever you are, doctor, whatever, listen to me. For the physical well-being of yourself, your wife, your child, right? You will go to any extent, you will exhaust all your efforts. If you, your child, your wife, has got cancer at an advanced level, you say, what can we do now? I'm staying in London now, so this problem has come, I must carry on making money, making majah, and carry on my life. Will you have that attitude? Or say, no, my physical well-being, my health, is my life. And I can't let this slip away. I have to do everything, whatever it costs me to get this right, I need to get this right. So that fikr that you had for your physical well-being, if you only have that level of fikr for your deeni welfare, inshallah you won't go wrong. But it's a one-sided thing, it's not fair. The way you are conducting your life, you're not fair. This side you want a very good sound security, mustn't slip. And you got a backup system for this, and another backup system, and you're spending on that. I ask you proportionally how much you're spending on this. Man said, Jazakallah, left the phone. Right. But it's a fact. It's one-sided thing. One side. Now, they speak to an alim, not because they want a solution, because they want to appease their conscience. The alim said, no, never mind, do whatever you can, live there, you're making money and all, make sugar, carry on. He wanted that type of a reply. And I didn't give that type of a reply. So, Rabbana Atina. Some that ask only Rabbana Atina. Let's give us dunya. So that dunya comes with a problem, with a disaster, with a bang, with an explosion. It's not a problem so long as the dunya comes. What will happen afterwards, in a few years you see it, then there's a problem in the marriage, there's a problem in the child, there's a problem in the grandchild, there's a problem in the son-in-law, the daughter-in-law, somewhere, some in the business is a problem, there's some problem coming up, but where it came from? Rabbana atina fid dunya. You just wanted them. But when you asked in the word of Allah Ta'ala, the word of the Quran Sharif, what did he say? Rabbana atina fid dunya hasana. What is good in your sight? Because what you say, what you declare is good, it can't have a problem. What I think is good is suspect. And what you declare as good can never be a suspect. Because you have declared this to be good. So it must come good. It must come with a good reward, with a good return. Even though it may be little, but yes, you have declared it to be good, there'll be a goodness in it. So this is the problem in this day, that we all want the figure. Sometimes I say it literally and figuratively, want the figure. We are not worried about the good that comes out of it. What we need to see is it good also? Is it good in the sight of Allah Ta'ala, is it good? Alright, 10 million to 100 million, then what? You will still need the same thing. This morning I was asking, 1 million I was asking, you know. I see you're losing shape, you are going through a diet. So I only, for breakfast, I only have ABC, apple, beetroot, and carrot. And lunch, what do you eat? 15 morsels. And the supper, I have just before Maghrib, 2 slices. Therefore, in 1.5 months, I lost 9 kilos. So I said, you are a multi-millionaire. So why are you earning all this? You've gone to such a sick diet, feeling nice. But then, for what are you earning so much? Well, you're not eating. If you are eating, you know, there was a reason for you to earn so much. But tum khate nahi, to kamate kyun? Churiya ki tarah se, chukte ho, you are taking like a bird, but you want to earn like an elephant. Is that right? Is it making sense? Anyway, talking about this, why my mind just drifted into this thing here. Allah put me mask it. So this youngster he's bursting at the seams on his youth. Now he's 20, 21, bursting at the seams. I must make it now. So he's thinking, one is a long way, 20 now, matriculated, 19, 20. So we have to go for a medical examination, 9 years there, pulling there. Then community service, internship, what chakkar put me, then I will start off. And then to rub money, big money. Then I must go and specialize another 5 years, all that chakkar, all that quick fix. Just do it. It's a very long course now. And this is a very short course. In a short time, I got the numbers. So how to get it? So, no. Banana Maldar Sadhe. This man here is wealthy. I'm just going to rob him, Find out the inside of the house, how it works out. Take some camera photos and all that. And then I'll just loot. Overnight I'll become a million, a multi-millionaire. So the youngster, the youth, they do and then they think. And the elderly and the experienced, they think and then they do. He's not looking what is going to be the consequence, what's going to happen out of it, what's going to be the outcome, he's not thinking anything. He is lucky when he went up there to that house, earmarked that house. So the wife and the husband, they are discussing. He's at night there, about 10 o'clock, and they're still discussing. The wife and the husband are discussing. Okay, Hamari Shahzadi, our princess, she's of age now, 17, 18. Now we need to settle her. She's of age now. We need to settle her. Now the girl is coming at 17, 18. No. See, I was quoting that verse of the Quran. إِذَا قِيلَ لَهُمْ لَا تُفْسِدُوا فِي الْأَرْضِ. It was Munafiqeen, right? Munafiqeen. Now, there's one category that I explained. Look at the other category. The other category, إِذَا قِيلَ لَهُمْ لَا تُفْسِدُوا فِي الْأَرْضِ. One of the characteristics explained in the Quran Sharif. To make it easy for us to understand them, let's use the word opportunist, right? Let us use the word opportunist. So they are opportunist. So they see, إِذَا أَظْلَمَ عَلَيْهِمْ قَامُوا. When they see some brightness, you know, things are working out, they're moving. World, opportunities, they are moving. And when something closes up, إِذَا أَظْلَمَ عَلَيْهِمْ قَامُوا, then they stand still. Worldly opportunities are coming up, they are moving. And when those opportunities all stop, then they stand still. Now, how they would explain, how they would encourage it, see, how they would encourage this, for a woman to get out of house. See, there's corruption in the mind, right? When this mind is corroded and corrupt, right? So they will not say, take your girl out of the house, let her, they won't say that. Because now this will look too aggressive. It will look too impolite. It won't see it, it won't sound right. But the conspiracy is that Muslim women must get out of the house. Because once they're out of the house, then the shame will drop. When the shame will drop, then we can rule them. See, the idea is we must rule. But how do we rule them? If they are remaining within the house, then the husband is ruling. Islam is ruling. And we need to turn it around, that we need to call the shots. So how we will call the shots is that we need to pull them out of the house. Once they're out of the house, in the workplace, in the office, wherever they are, then we are going to rule their lives. But if you want to tell them straight, come out of your house, go into the marketplace, go into this place, they're not going to listen. It'll seem like we are biased, it'll seem that we are prejudiced, it'll seem that we are very aggressive. So they will have to have a slogan just to put them out of the house. So, you know, look, first I'll explain the Quran verse, then I'll come to this example. إِذَا قِيَلُمْ لَا تُفْسِدُوا فِي الْأَرْضِ قَالُوا إِنَّمَا نَحْنُ مُسْلِحُونَ. When they are told not to cause corruption and mischief, they say we are out here just to put things right, to make peace, to make things right. But Allah Ta'ala says, Allah innahum humul mufsidun. Listen, they are the ones that are corrupt, mischief. But they don't realize this. Right? Let me give an example to explain this whole concept, right? One is a thief that comes to your shop, he pills fridges, right? To go to chocolate, takes or something. Gave one, two shots, kicked him, threw him off, right? So that was a small, little, petty thief. Took a flake chocolate or takes, and he ran away, right? And the other comes in a very dignified, in a noble manner, he comes to your shop, boss, I'm at work, you know. So he's coming, getting the job, and he's doing his duties properly, diligently, coming on time, leaving on time, executing all his duties, seeing that he's particular with the cash, meticulous. No, you don't see any wrong in him. But he has got another agenda. What agenda he's got? He wants to steal your business away. So when he wants to steal your business away, what he's doing, he's looking for your client list and your suppliers list. Where are you sourcing your stuff from? Who's your suppliers? What deals you're getting? And I will look at your clientele. So he wants to steal that away from you. And in a year or 2 years, he got all this information, your clientele, and where you're sourcing, and he built up a good rapport. 1-2 years he spent, but a good rapport. The boss also had a lot of confidence in him. After the 2 years, in the next corner of the town, he opened up the same shop, he got all the clientele diverted that side, and he knows how to source, because he was doing all the stuff. So I asked him, who's the one that is corrupt? This person had a very dignified look. Things was wonderful. But then what he turned out to be? Allah innahum humul mufsidun. Really, these people are the corrupt. They are the mischief, but they don't realize it. They come in at front. The front is very good. You can't point any mistake. Can't point any discrepancy. But I ask you, who's worse? The one that is pilfering your shop? Or this person, who's worse? So this is the second class of the munafiqin. And today you had it. You have it. Look in the West, this is now like a kamal kaha jata hai, like an achievement. You know, you can do it so well, that level of diplomacy, you can use it, you can't get caught out, you know. But you use it so cleverly and so discreetly use it, nobody can catch you out. So now that's called a kamal, that's called an achievement, a perfection. Now again, you're coming to this woman, new story, and the idea is to throw her out of the house, let her be in the business, she must be an attraction for all the world. She must serve the world, but must look after her parents. Must look after the house, she mustn't do that. Yes, she must make money. Now, They can do it in a very, very aggressive, in a raw, in an uncouth way. But now they'll do it in a very professional way. How they'll do it in a professional way? They will say, just one statement they'll make. What if? What if? That's the only word. Just two words. What if? Something doesn't happen. What's the security? You see that? This is the shaitan that is talking. What if? I ask you, what is the guarantee that this girl will be something good? What's the guarantee? She'll be good for herself. She'll be good for everybody else. What's the guarantee? Number two, there is a over a 1,000-year track record that the women that remained home, they made good children. Children came out nice. They were respectable. Mothers were also respected. And there was a very noble, respectable community. Now compare this against the riffraff of this woman here. Then I ask you, do they look same? Because they put them on the same surf. They may speak more posh. They may influence you. They may affect you. You know, إِذَا رَأَيْتَهُمْ تُعْجِبُكَ أَجْسَامُهُمْ وَإِنْ يَقُولُوا تَسْمَعَ لِقَوْلِهِمْ. If you see them, you get affected. You can look at them and you get affected. Right? Look at the bodies, you know. The bodies also, they seem attractive. But كَأَنَّهُمْ خُشُبٌ مُسَلَّمٌ. It's total hollow. Nothing in them. Nothing left. That iman is gone. That value for people is gone. Everything is lost. If there is a value in this type of class of people, then it is a value for money. Nothing else. They can fly, they can work, they can go out of the homes. Every law of the Sharia can be broken down. No. A genuine person earning this type of money. So, that money becomes the god eventually. So anyway, we're talking of this youngster here. A lot of things came in between. This person, he's talking to his wife, he's discussing with his wife. You know, our daughter is of age now, 17, 18 years of age. And now she's come to this age, we together settled. So how do we go about getting her settled? So the wife is, the husband is discussing it with the wife. So discussing over, now this person is overhearing. He came to loot and is overhearing the discussion what's going on. So the wife is saying, you know what? Mere bachchi ko, shahzadi ko, the princess, unki shaadi kara do kisi sahib huzuri ke saath. Get your daughter, get the princess married to a person of huzuri. Huzuri means, so it's a technical term, get her married to a man that is ever conscious of Allah Ta'ala. So the king asked, why, there are other wealthy people, you are of a certain class, right? But you are preferring your daughter to be married to this type of a person. But what is the reason for your preference? There must be, you know, there's 10 people here, and you prefer this person here. So there must be a reason for the preference. What is the reason for the preference? So the wife says, you know what? The reason for the preference is, when the person will be ever conscious of Allah Ta'ala, then your daughter won't suffer. She won't suffer emotionally, she won't suffer verbally, she won't suffer physically, she won't suffer in her deen. Because a man is so conscious of Allah Ta'ala. So how will he ever cause any type of emotional abuse, physical abuse, verbal abuse, no abuse? She may not have all the best, but yes, she'll never suffer. She won't suffer abuse, whether it's emotional, whether it is verbal, whether it's whatever type of abuse, but she will never suffer. Just to explain this, you know, abuse. Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam planned to sit in i'tikaf, right? And Aisha radiallahu anha had permission to sit also, right? In the meanwhile, Hafsa also got permission. Now, dusre ka dekha dekhi. Now, the other wives came in, Zainab also came in. Hey, these people are they're taking the lead now, and I'm getting left out. You know how a co-wife, how she'll feel, right? But they're all getting the attention of Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam, and they're going to be in i'tikaf with Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam, and I'll get left out. Now, Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam came into the masjid, and he saw 1, 2, 3, 4. Now, what is all this? Al birra turidna. Are they intending piety and righteousness? Or is it a rivalry now? Is this a rivalry? Or are they intending, really they really intend piety. So the Prophet said, get all this out. Even minds, get it out. Now look at this. You know, I spoke about emotional abuse. Look at this side. So he got their tents out, but he got his tent out as well, so as to make it easy for them. Maybe some must have had some reason that he also pulled out his tent. So they will not feel affected. But just out of respect for the consideration, respect and consideration for the feelings of his wife, he said, no, remove my tent as well. Now, can you manage to have so much of consideration for your wife? In the ibadah, it was so much that you had no consideration for their feelings. Now, if you have the zarurat, can you have that level of understanding, consideration, respect? Can you have that? So anyway, he's listening to this conversation. So the wife is saying to the king, okay, you know what? You need to have a sahib of huzuri, who's got the consciousness of Allah Ta'ala. He won't hurt her in any way. In any way, physical, mental, emotional, in any way, he's not an abuser. So this is the right person for our daughter. Now when he heard this, he changed his mind. You know, I had one intention, and now he heard this whole conversation, and in the conversation he heard that, you know, that it's the only daughter we've got, only one child. So his itinerary already began to work. You know what? Just now, the Buddha, what you care? You're already 60, 70 now. How much more are they going to live? They'll lead a successor to the throne. I'll cash in, and I'll cash in big way. So let me work out my plan. Here, if I want to steal here, I may make a mil, 2 mil max, you know. I won't get more than that. So here, I need to work another plan. He's doing all the mathematics, how he's going to plan himself. He grabbed the corner of one masjid. Not a very big masjid, but in a very strategic point, and he grabbed the corner. All day and night, he was Rosa, Zikr, Quran Sharif, Hizbul Azam, Munajat al-Maqbool, Salatul Hajat, Salatul Tasbih, the works, whole day is covered up. Slowly but gradually, but surely, the news began to filter through the whole town. Hey, Allah wala. From that now, he says, hey, ye toh, humare zamane ka abdal hai, bhai. Kya samajhte ho? Then he escalated. No, not as abdal now. Now he's a kutub of the time. Let's go for him. Any duas, let's go for him. Let's go to him. So, he's grabbed that corner, he's dedicated, he's focused in his work. In the meanwhile, the king now, after a month, 2 months, he thought about it seriously, you know, I need to get my things in place now. So, he won't just listen to his wife immediately. He has to think, reason, understand, work out a plan. It takes 3, 4 months, 5 months, 6 months, up to a year, before he can actually, you know, work the plan. You plan the work and then you work the plan. So it took him a year or so. In the meanwhile, this person grabbed the corner, he's gone. The whole town is talking. So the king now can't go in person and do the homework. So he got one of his special men. Hey, I need, this is a description of the person that I need. As a son-in-law, for my daughter. Making the homework, going this side, that side, eventually news reached him that this is the genuine person. Hey, he doesn't get angry, he's such a cool person, such a calm person, old days in ibadat, zikr, sa'id, huzuri, that's the person. Proper description. Now to make an appointment with him, he needed to spend about 3 days in the masjid, because zikr is finished, Hizbul Azam. That is finished. That is making kitabin, fazail al-sadaqat. That is finished, is asr namaz. After that is awabin. Awabin is isha namaz. No way to talk to him. One day, in the third day, he was just going to the toilet or coming from wuzu, and I intercepted him. And by, you know, please, for the sake of Allah Ta'ala, I'm in a state of desperation, and I need to make a response very quick. Tell me what you want. So this is what I've been sent for. The king has sent me. For what? So this is the whole thing. This is what the king's intention was. This is the whole intention. This is why he sent me. So this youngster now, it's a year passed, and he's dedicated himself. Then he wept. And he says, see, my intentions were all corrupt. This was the person I was. This was the intention that had come up. Right? this was my intention. But is Allah karne, Allah karna, ye mujhe Allah hi ka bana diya. Ye Allah karna, isne mujhe Allah hi ka bana diya. He was stealing zikr, whatever he was doing. Initially the niyat wasn't so right, whatever he was going off. But he persisted, continued. Is Allah karne ne, mujhe Allah hi ka bana diya. No, I just lost taste of the world. The world, the attractions, whatever the world got to offer. I just lost the taste. When I lost the taste, no, don't put that carrot before me now. I don't need it now. Before, yes. See, about 8 months ago, had you come to me, I would have taken it. But now I lost the taste for it. When I lost the taste for it, now don't put it before me. So this part of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, it comes with an enjoyment. It comes with a relish. Right? It comes with work. Yesterday someone was discussing this. So I explained to him, see, anything in this world requires courage. Without courage you can't do anything. Can you perform fajr namaz without courage? So you're enjoying your sleep, so nice, relaxed, right? Warm bed, right? Is it an easy thing? Especially when you know, when you don't see any material reward. When you know it's a material reward, then 1 o'clock in the morning, you can get up. Because you know it's in the returns. If I get up at 1 o'clock, I'll do this deal, I'll get about $1 million, So 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock, whatever time, I'm ready for it, right? But now, this one, I'll get up Fajr Namaz, what's going to be the returns? I don't see any material returns. So, what's the point in getting up? I can read afterwards, it's an obligation. Allah Pak is Ghafoor Rahim. Allah Pak will make maaf. So, whatever you're doing, whether it's of a worldly nature or a deeny nature, what you require is courage. That's the point, right? Any small thing or big thing, worldly or deeny and spiritual, for you to be able to embark onto it, you need courage. Without the courage, you can't do it. Small or big, but you need to pluck that himmat. And then you pluck that determination, that courage, and Allah puts you moving. He makes you move after that. But now the question is this, that for you to get that courage, you need an encouragement. What? For you to get courage, you need to be encouraged. Then you become encouraged. You become courageous when you get an encouragement. If there's no encouragement, then do you have the courage to do things? Sometimes I tell my friends, in an amusing manner. See, when I was young, I never learned to drive, right? I never took the courage. So now, after almost 45, 50 years now, I still know how to drive. See, I didn't take the courage. 50 years have passed, but I can't still drive. Why? I didn't take the courage to do it. But then I explained to them, see, you learn to drive, right? In the process of learning to drive, you must have made some small accident, you must have caused some damage here, there, whatever tofan you made. Someone elderly must have reprimanded you, scolded you. But did that break your courage? In spite of you getting that scolding, reprimanding, you dropped damage on our car, what you did now, see how much it will cost us. You must have got the scolding, all that, but did it break your courage? I need to do this. So you are determined. When you determine anything, that courage, they scolded you, they shouted you, but you went back onto the wheel. You went back onto the wheel. And after some time, now you became a professional driver by the person of Allah. Doesn't happen like that. So you were courageous. When that courage brought you onto that wheel. But for that courage, what you require is encouragement. Now the question is what brings about the encouragement? And you understand that to do something, you need courage. Okay? But what brings you to that level of encouragement? What gives you that? So, for this now, I explain this to the students. I said, see, our akabir, right? And people ask, what do you mean by our akabir? You got the hadith in the Quran, so it's Sahaba Kiram. So what is this akabir story about? It's easy to say what is our akabir story about. But now, it's nice, it's the fair thing and the just thing is make a proper study analysis, right? See the whole story. When you want to see a story, see for about 50 years, 70 years, and then you will see the whole story, right? And so we'll see the whole story spanning out before you. You'll see it fair, you'll see it right, you'll see it going into a direction. Right? Over a period of 50 years or 60 years. Now look at those people that had some type of a taluk with the Akabir. Right? First, the Buzuganadin that came to our country, right? As a Sheikh Hamdulari, as a Jimam Masihullah Sahib Rahmatullari, as a Mufti Sahib Rahmatullari, as a Mu'abara Sahib Rahmatullari, as a Gibakhtar Sahib Rahmatullari, right? So all these Akabir had come to the country, right? Then when these Akabir came, then many of us linked up with them. Right? Some had linked up with a stronger determination and a commitment, and some were linked up but not with that resolve. Now those that had linked up, now after 45 years, now look at their lives and look at the lives of their children. They got a direction in life. They're not lost. They're not in a disarray. They're not like lost things, you know. They've got a direction in life, right? They may make something ulta sida, wanku chungu, there may be some problem, right? But overall, by and large, they got a direction. You look into their homes, you look into their children or their grandchildren, you will find a direction. Now compare them against those who didn't have any taluk with these akabir, right? Or they have any taluk with the elders of the jamaat, right? One is the elders of the khanqa, then the elders of the jamaat. They didn't have any taluk at all. Not with this elders, not with that elders. No akabir at all in their lives. Now compare these people's life against these people's life. Do you see a distinct difference? Do you see a difference or not? You'll see it clearly, provided you are looking with the eyes of honesty. If you look at it with honesty, you'll find a distinct difference. Right? As we're sitting here, the only thing you see is a Jalalabadi cap, right? Hey, they're wearing the jar. That's the only thing you'll see. Right? But behind the cap, there's a lot of things going in. So you said, no, the Akabir's ways, right? Now, if you just divorce yourself, you break yourself, you abandon yourself from that ways, so what happens? The first thing that happens, you'll say, alright, you know what? You must just go by the hadith. Sunnah, that's the main thing. As though you only know Sunnah, these people didn't know the Sunnah, right? So you'll come according to the Sunnah, you'll come to the, you'll put the Sunnah before you. Is the hadith authentic? Awa likullikum thawbani, right? Does everybody have two clothes? In other words, it was a time that they're performing namaz, right? And when they are performing namaz, so many of them are performing namaz with just one single sheet, right? Just one single sheet. So that means when they are performing namaz with just one cloth, then obviously the head couldn't be covered. Because it's just one cloth. Imagine the haram cloth, right? So you have to cover your cloth, you cover your body. You'll be more concerned about covering your upper body until your knees, right? So it can't be that you'll be covering right to your head, right? Can't cover that. Awa likullikum thawban, right? So that means there were quite a few sahaba kiram that did not perform the namaz with a topi, right? Don't you come to the same conclusion? But now ask yourself, what was the surrounding circumstances that they did not put on the topi? Why? The circumstance was this, that they couldn't afford the cloth. When they couldn't afford the cloth, then how do you expect them to put on a topi? Think to yourself, reason, right? When they couldn't afford the second cloth, right, then will they be in a position to afford the topi? No. So the reason allowed them to perform the namaz in the manner that was affordable to them. He didn't force them, now you can't afford now. See that you get a topi and then you come to the masjid. No. This is not affordable to you. What is affordable, you put that on and come. So this group now that wants this free thought, you know, and don't want to be linked up, don't want to be tied up. So this is the first point of the freedom. A topi goes out. And the topi can be resembled to the cap of a cold drink, right? As long as the cap is there, right? The cap is sealed properly, the cold drink fetches its value. I ask you, it's open now, does it open its value? Everything that was in it, that escapes. The same thing happens. When the topi comes out, then the goodness that's within you, that escapes it. Slowly, gradually, gracefully. Then everything escapes. The topi is there, though it preserves everything. Everything is preserved. I say, hey, How can I look at this thing, man? How can I talk to that girl so freely? I'm very stupid. Will you have the heart to just talk, to openly dialogue with a woman? No, God is stupid. How can I do this thing? It looks embarrassing. It looks very shameful that I'm having an open discussion like this. Why, with dystopia, how can I steal? You know? How can I rob someone? How can I speak a lie? So dystopia then becomes a preservative. It preserves everything. Like I say, the cap in the cold ring, it preserves everything. Now, when you moved away, when you divorced yourself from the akabir, so the first thing that happened, the topi came out. Right. When the topi came out, a level of freedom came into you. Now, at the second level now, you say, you know what? What's wrong in wearing your jammies? That thing also is covering my knees. So what's wrong in wearing your jammies? Nothing wrong in wearing your jammies. So what's wrong? I got a kurta and I got a jammies. So what's wrong? So you see that this attitude comes into you. What's so bad about this? What's so bad about this? So the topi went out at the second level, then the jammies came in. Okay? So you still pacified yourself that the jammies is covering my knees. My satar is still covered. So what's wrong in this? You're pacifying yourself, appeasing yourself. Then at the third level, it doesn't stop, it carries on. You see this freedom charter, this charter of freedom, it carries on. Then you tell yourself, you know what, it's such a hot day, you know, it's really clumsy to be wearing a long sleeve kurta. Let me wear a short sleeve kurta, you know, that's also a kurta. Now my satar is covered, so what's wrong if I wear a short sleeve kurta? See, one thing escaped, second thing escaped. Now, what happened? Now, from the long sleeve came the short sleeve kurta. And you quite bored about what's wrong. My satar is covered, so what's wrong? You know, what's so wrong about this? It's a dignified dress, everybody's wearing this type of a thing. So what's wrong with that short sleeve? So you see, the topi went away, the trouser went away, the short sleeve came in. Now, when you came at the third level, now, at the fourth level, then you say yourself, you know what? Well, you know, wearing a kurta is not a compulsory attire. What's wrong if I just wear jeans and a t-shirt? I can perform a namaz, my satar is covered. What's wrong with that? So the topi is gone, the trouser is gone, the kurta is gone, right? Now, what's left of the person? What's left of the person? Everything just evaporates. One thing after the other, one thing after the other, everything evaporates in that person. So that easy way to remain preserved is just to keep yourself contacted, connected. When you kept yourself connected, now you can't break away. You think to yourself, you know, well, I had the honor of seeing Hazrat Ji Rahmatullah Ali. I had the honor of seeing Hazrat Mufti Sahib Rahmatullah Ali. I had the honor of seeing Hazrat Sheikh Rahmatullah Ali. But, you know, they're dressed for something else. When you think about these people, then sometimes it brings a tear in your eye. You know, those beautiful moments that we had, and you know, the beautiful discussion that we had with him. Beautiful moments, will they ever come again? And then, it is that love for that moment that overwhelms you. And, you know, when there's love, there's real love, then the love is blind. Well, Hazrat Ji wore this topi, I'll wear it. He wore this type of kurta, I'll wear it. No matter what it is after that. But I just got this attachment. I don't want to break that affinity, I don't want to break that allegiance with him. He wore this type of a thing, so let me wear it. Whatever it costs, let me wear it. But just that attire then preserves you. Gradually, slowly, slowly. I don't think you become a farishta overnight. But you kept yourself linked. You kept yourself aligned. You kept yourself in contact, right? You didn't break away. You didn't break away to your own reasoning, to your own understanding, to your freedom charter. You didn't break away. It preserved you. With time, then you could see, oh, this is, you know, I'm not being connected. This could have been the consequence today. Now, I am connected then, and then it brought me a level of freedom, and this level of freedom, this is what it brought me to today. This is what he will say. Right, this freedom that we are asking for, and we desire of, is a disaster. Right? Everybody says, no, me, I'm safe, I know what it is, I will take care. But very person pious, right? Pious, a little bit educated also, so he came crying. He says, you know what, my daughter, and I said her to matric, you know, she'll be matriculated. Right? Pious is dean in my house. Now, she's come home, and she's pregnant with a non-Muslim. Right? Now what do I do? What do I do? It's an embarrassment for me, embarrassment for my home. My wealth doesn't mean anything now to me. All that I did for her security, for my own wealth, I got enough. I don't need anything. So much I've got. But the embarrassment that I've brought to myself, where do I go and hide myself? But you see that izzat, it only strikes you at that moment of disgrace, what that izzat really means. Before that, before it could strike you, you didn't know what was the worth of that izzat. But when it struck you, this what happened to your own daughter, now you say, hey, what have I done? But now, can you ever delete this? Can you move this? The whole world knows now, so-and-so's daughter, she was sleeping around with so-and-so, an all-Muslim, and today she's become pregnant, and now what do you do about it? But you see the freedom structure, where it starts off from, and when it ends up. Where it ends up now, you are drowning in disgrace. When you're drowning in disgrace, now you don't know what to do about it. So the simple thing is, just keep yourself connected. Somehow, I don't say that everybody will become the most perfect person, and the best person, and the greatest buzruk will become. But a little bit of contact. The better the contact, the better the results. Right? The better. But if you can't keep the perfect contact, but some contact, with some akabir, some buzrukana deen, someone that is adhering to the sunnah, someone that is the way of Nabi Sassam, or akabir, or buzrukana deen, or ulama ikram, they're holding on. I don't say you become 100% buzruk overnight. Azmullah Thami Sahib Rahmatullah, he went to Dhaka. So the Nawab had invited him. But now, Nawab is like the Induna of the whole place. The whole place, he's the Induna, right? So his family will all be very influential, wealthy class of people. So they didn't appreciate this. The riffraff, all types of people are coming in our gatherings. They wanted an exclusive sitting with Azmullah Thami Sahib Rahmatullah Ali. Well, I said, see, in my gathering, there must be no restriction. Riffraff, all the 70 is allowed. It can't be an exclusive sitting. Only elite class of people, this wealthy class of people. No, I don't want that. So now the Nawab Sahib wants his family to come in. Right? But now, this condition of moral law, how can he respect that condition? These people are prepared to sit here. So he thought of an isolated spot, some park or something. It'll be a little bit out of the town. So this ordinary class, you know, they won't be able to reach there. So he announced that the next majlis is there. So all, when these people here, when they heard that the majlis is about 10 kilometers out of town, he got a cycle, he got a rickshaw, whatever, and they pulled it that side. The Mullah saw that this is the class of people. Now he needs to get them at least on the beard at least. So he says, I can't get you to keep the beard immediately. But I can ask you to do one thing. You know, you're talking about justifying. So look at Mu'ah, how he corrected these people. So see, when you go to sleep, say 5-10 minutes before you sleep, you cry to Allah, what I'm doing is wrong. Both the badkar ki samkadmi. I'm a big sinner, Allah, make me maaf. Up till now, I don't have the himmat, you know, I don't have the courage to keep a beard. But I know it's a respected sunnah of your Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam. I would like to do it one day. But today I don't have the himmat, I don't have the courage to do it as yet. I don't have the determination to do it. But Rabbi, nothing is impossible for you. Rabbi, give me a tawfiq one day that I also can keep a mubarak sunnat. My face will look so much better that I, at least if I'm going to be lying in a grave and Nabi Sallallahu is shown to me, you know, at least I can tell you this much. At some level, at least I conformed. I wasn't a total sellout. I didn't betray you, you know. I wasn't a traitor to your system. At least, some level I've got some conformity. So cry for at least 5 minutes. The cry doesn't have to be with words. In your room, you are lying down, your wife is on one side, you on the other side, but you are conversing with Allah Ta'ala. Even if you are lying, just converse. Even in your mind, if you are conversing to Allah Ta'ala, Allah Ta'ala will appreciate it. But I ask you, even if you die in that state, but isn't it a wonderful state? That you acknowledge that this is wrong what I'm doing. I like the way of Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam. I just don't have the himmat to do it. I don't have the courage to do it. But I definitely am wrong. I accept my wrong. And I want to be on the right. But what Allah will look at you favorably? Allah will grant us all to favor.